I'd first like to express my appreciation and thanks for those who have been praying recently with my responsibility at Upton. I thank Brother Donnie for the second glass of water. He gets a double reward. And I appreciate your continued prayers for this evening. If you came this evening expecting to hear from a man with black hair and a beard, that's not going to happen. Continue to pray for Brother Jim. I love him dearly, and just talking with him on the phone today was a blessing, even though he was not feeling up to it. I hope that you came this evening expecting to hear a message from God. The title is A Revival That Rebuilt Walls. The walls of Jerusalem had an important significance in the lives of God's people. In Bible times, larger cities were often surrounded by walls. A well-constructed wall that was defended made a city almost impenetrable. The condition of a city's walls, therefore, spoke volumes about the condition of its inhabitants. In Nehemiah's time, the walls of Jerusalem were in shambles. Being previously destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar almost 150 years earlier, such a deplorable condition made Jerusalem vulnerable to its enemies. Yet because of apathy and fear, the Jews failed to take any decisive steps of action to remedy the problem. That is, until Nehemiah appeared on the scene. With passion, he appealed to the people in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17. And you might want to have your Bibles open to the book of Nehemiah. We'll be referring there to at least a few key verses. Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 17, "Ye see the distress that we are in, how Jerusalem lieth waste, and the gates thereof are burned with fire. Come, and let us build up the wall of Jerusalem, that we be no more a reproach." The broken down walls caused distress within and made God's people a reproach and a disgrace. In a figurative sense, walls represent spiritual fortification and protection. Those who live in defiance and rebellion of God's ways have no walls. Backsliding believers who have drifted from God's commands have walls that are fallen apart. They leave themselves wide open to the attack of the enemy who comes to steal, kill, and destroy. Proverbs 25:28 says, "He that hath no rule over his own spirit is like a city that is broken down and without walls." If the walls of your life are broken down this evening, if your defenses have crumbled, the enemy can surround you from every side, and you will easily fall prey. In the end, you will be vulnerable to defeat and destruction. But it doesn't have to remain that way. When revival takes place within your heart, the walls of your spiritual life can be rebuilt. Believers and churches can benefit from the spiritual lessons of revival tucked away in the pages of Nehemiah. In a time when the walls of New Testament Christianity are broken down, we need those with zeal and determination like Nehemiah. The key verse of the message is found in Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 20. It is a proclamation and a testimony of faith and vision, and comes as an answer to the threatening and defiant questions found in Nehemiah 2, verse 19. But when Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, and Geshem the Arabian heard it, they laughed us to scorn and despised us and said, "What is this thing that ye do? Why or will ye rebel against the king?" And then the text of the message this evening, to which Nehemiah answered in verse 20, "The God of heaven, he will prosper us. Therefore, we his servants will arise and build. But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem." These three clauses of verse 20 form the outline of the message this evening. Number one, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. Nehemiah's response in verse 20 was to the opposition of Sanballat, Tobiah, and Geshem, a delegation of the ruling officials in the surrounding areas who were deeply concerned about this new threat to their control and power. Because of their hatred for God's people, they reverted to mockery and lies in an attempt to obstruct Nehemiah's plans. Nehemiah had barely set foot on the homeland of his fathers when Sanballat and Tobiah set into motion a resistance movement against Nehemiah and his fellow Jews. The hatred and disgust coming from Sanballat and Tobiah is obvious, as we read in Nehemiah 2, chapter 10. When Sanballat the Horonite and Tobiah the servant, the Ammonite, heard of it, it grieved them exceedingly that there was a man, or there was come a man, to seek the welfare of the children of Israel. Later, when Sanballat and Tobiah approached Nehemiah in the city, Nehemiah did not stoop to their level, nor did he enter into a debate. He simply testified of his full trust and confidence in the God of heaven. Nehemiah's eyes were focused on the God who had previously shown himself strong when he moved the heart of King Artaxerxes. As far as Nehemiah was concerned, he already saw those walls standing tall and true, the gates repaired, and Jerusalem protected in all its glory as the city of the great king. So Nehemiah simply stated his position in one sentence and quickly and confidently went on with his business. He refused to argue. And he pointed out that it was God's project and God's idea. His dependence did not rest in his own abilities or his human strength. His hope was in the God of heaven. Oh, that we would say the same today. When opposition to the word of God and the ways of God come knocking on the door of our plans and purposes and programs, may we testify loud and clear with vision and trust, God is the only source of true spiritual prosperity. He is the one who will prosper us within our personal lives and within the life of the church. Nehemiah had already confessed the sins of his people, and he was claiming the promises and the prosperity of God. Proverbs 28:13, "He that covereth his sins shall not prosper. But whoso confesseth and forsaketh them shall have mercy." May we be willing to do the same. Nehemiah took God at his word, and he based his life on that word. May we be willing to do the same. And then we can claim the promise of Psalm 1 and be like a tree planted by the rivers of water that bringeth forth his fruit in his season. His leaf also shall not wither, and whatsoever he doeth shall prosper. Later, when the opposition organized attacks and fought against the workers, Nehemiah reminded them of the fact that God would fight the enemy on their behalf. Look at verse 4, or chapter 4, verse 14. Nehemiah 4:14, and I looked and rose up and said unto the nobles and to the rulers and to the rest of the people, be not ye afraid of them. Remember the Lord, which is great and terrible, and fight for your brethren, your sons and your daughters, your wives and your houses. Verse 20, in what place therefore ye hear the sound of the trumpet, resort ye thither unto us, our God shall fight for us. How about today, in the battles of the spiritual realm? From where do we get our weapons? Where do we get our power? Ephesians 6:10, finally, my brethren, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Verse 13 of Ephesians 6, wherefore take unto you the whole armor of God, that ye may be able to withstand in the evil day. Clause 1 was the God of heaven. He will prosper us. Let's consider clause number 2. Therefore we his servants will arise and build. Nehemiah, let it be known that they were God's servants, and that it was God who was going to make this project prosper. They were going to proceed on that basis, rebuilding the walls. Nehemiah chapter 3, we're not going to spend much time there, but that is interesting. It lists the builders and where they worked along the wall. And if you would inspect this chapter, you would notice the words next unto or next to appearing 15 times. And the words after him appearing 16 times in this chapter. 15 plus 16 equals 31. Commitments to unity. They worked side by side, unified as one. Can you picture all around the circumference of the city, there was a line of people working together with one mind, for they had a mind to work. And with one purpose, the walls were going to be rebuilt. Can you catch a vision of what can happen in a church or a broader group of churches when congregations have unity? One body, one spirit, called in one hope, as Paul describes. Brothers and sisters working side by side, unified as one. Building together, working together, encouraging each other, building each other up. For that to happen, the common denominator needs to be Jesus Christ, who is the truth and the Spirit who guides us into truth. John 16:13, howbeit when he, the Spirit of truth, has come, he will guide you into all truth. For he shall speak not of himself, but whatsoever he shall hear, that shall he speak. And he will show you things to come. Nehemiah 4:6, So we built a wall, and all the wall was joined together unto the half thereof, for the people had a mind to work. The entire length of the wall was at least 2 miles, possibly as long as 2.5 miles. Not all the sections of the wall were totally destroyed or in the same state of disrepair. Nonetheless, what the people accomplished in a short amount of time, considering the working conditions and the enemy opposition, was an amazing feat that astounded anyone who heard of it or observed. There was only one explanation. It was of God. Jump ahead to Nehemiah 6, verses 15 and 16. So the wall was finished in the 25th day of the month Yule, in 52 days. And it came to pass that when all our enemies heard thereof, and all the heathen that were about us saw these things, they were much cast down in their own eyes, for they perceived that this work was wrought of our God. Yes, God gave the vision. God gave the strength. God gave the protection. But he did not eliminate the opposition, the hardship, or the events that caused discouragement. He allowed those. The building had to go on with effort, with determination, with some heartache on their part. Let's consider some of that opposition and what they did to protect themselves while building. From the enemy, there was wrath, there was indignation, there was mockery, there were attacks and requests for negotiations. What did Nehemiah do? Nehemiah took the following action. Verse 9 of chapter 4. Nevertheless, we made our prayer unto our God and set a watch against them day and night because of them. First and foremost, there was prayer. Then they, not for one moment, left themselves unguarded. Day and night, around the clock, there was a watchman ready to sound the trumpet and make the battle cry if the enemy made an approach. Do those words sound familiar in the instructions we have been given? Watch and pray. Matthew 26:41, Jesus saying, watch and pray, that ye enter not into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak. In our daily battles, watch and pray. Likewise, there are some uncertain days ahead. We have a defense prescribed by our Savior relating to the time before his coming. In Mark 13:33, take ye heed, watch and pray, for ye know not when the time is. Not for one moment can we let down our guard and spiritual defense system. Winston Churchill, against incredible odds, led a nation to victory in World War II. Here's what he said to a group of young men at Harrow School, October 29th, 1941. I contend that it must be our attitude in the spiritual battle. Quote, never give in, never give in, never, 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 never. In nothing, great or small, large or petty, never give in. Accept to convictions of honor and good sense. Never yield to force. Never yield to the apparently overwhelming might of the enemy." Unquote. What else did Nehemiah have the people do to defend themselves? Half of the men worked. Half of the men held spears, shields, and bows, and the habergeons. Those who did work used one hand for labor, and the other held a weapon. Verse 18, "For the builders, every one had his sword girded by his side, and so built it. They held their swords morning to night and slept in their clothes, removing them only for washing." Their mission cry was arise and build. They took every action needed for defense, but that did not prevent them from building. Our mission cry needs to be arise and build. We cannot be distracted by the enemy's tactics to derail us from our mission. As Nehemiah, we must reject and avoid distractions which will only prevent us from reaching our full potential in our mission to build for Jesus Christ and the church. Expose the workers of iniquity to protect our families and flock from the evil. Yes, by all means, but don't forget we must build. Defend what we hold dear by waging spiritual warfare against the attacks of the enemy. Yes, by all means, but not for one moment can we neglect to build. It must go on. We cannot allow ourselves to focus primarily on the negative. We cannot build our stage on resistance. We cannot make our sole mission one of opposition. It's not about who we are against. It is about who we are for and what we are building. It must go on. Time is limited. Arise and build is the cry, echoing from the book of Nehemiah. 1 Corinthians 3:11, "For other foundation can no man lay than that is laid, which is Jesus Christ. Now if any man build upon this foundation, gold, silver, precious stones, wood, hay, stubble, every man's work shall be made manifest, for the day shall declare it, because it shall be revealed by fire. And the fire shall try every man's work of what sort it is." We are building, brothers and sisters, on the foundation of Jesus Christ. He and He alone is the way, the truth, and the life. He is the chief cornerstone. He is the rock of our salvation. He is the head of the church. He is the truth. Proclaim that truth and build upon it. As His servants, our mission is to arise and build. I repeat, our focus, our priority, our mission is to build. Clause number 3. "But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem." Nehemiah here brought his vision into clear focus, both in the eyes of God's people who were standing around him and in the eyes of God's enemies. The Jews, God's servants, would rebuild, but the opponents had no share or claim or historic right, and that's what memorial means there, to the city. Is there a parallel today in our faith and practice? Our worship, our service, our ministry, and our work in the church. We have a heritage of early brother who followed the word and proclaimed the truth. We have remained true to the word that they sincerely followed. Our loyalty now needs to rest in the same word and in that word alone. To those who oppose the truth and mock what we believe and practice, can we do anything other than Nehemiah by saying, "But ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in the historic faith of the gospel. Ye have no present share or claim. You have no historic right to what we hold dear." Those who oppose God and those who oppose God's truth have no right to the sacred things of God. When Sanballat, Tobiah, Geshem, and other enemies heard that the wall was completed and that the only thing remaining was to set the doors in the gates, the opposition forces tried new tactics. One of those was a meeting in a village on the plain of Ono. The town was also named Ono. Now, on the surface, it appeared that Sanballat and his cohorts wanted to have peace negotiations, just talk things over. But their hidden motive was to distract, harm, or even eliminate Nehemiah and thereby stop the rebuilding. Nehemiah was filled with God's wisdom, and he suspected foul play. Why would they want him a day's journey away from Jerusalem? I realize the English pronunciation of the town Ono is probably different, but the name alone, in our language at least, raises a bad feeling. Oh no. Nehemiah 6:3, what was Nehemiah's response? "And I sent messengers unto them, saying, I am doing a great work, so that I cannot come down. Why should the work cease while I leave it and come down to you? Yet they sent unto me 4 times after this sort, and I answered them after the same manner." We have a picture here. The opposition did not give up. They were persistent. And there is a lesson. Meetings, conversations, discussions, negotiations with those who resist and mock the truth are futile and will only distract us and take time from our real mission of building for Jesus Christ. We must be determined that the present-day Sanballats, Tobias, cannot prevent us from building, and they will not draw us into their territory. There is no common ground in the land of Ono. Those who oppose God, those who oppose God's truth, have no right to the sacred things of God. Clause 1, the God of heaven, he will prosper us. The application, God is the only source of true spiritual prosperity in our personal lives and within the life of the church. Clause 2, therefore we his servants will arise and build. The application, as his servants, our mission is to arise and build. Our focus, our priority, our ambition is to build. Clause 3, but ye have no portion, nor right, nor memorial in Jerusalem. The application, Those who oppose God and mock God's truth have no right to the sacred things of God. Brother Merle Biebenauer, would you come and lead us in closing prayer as we kneel?